The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. So welcome everybody. It's nice to be here practicing together. So tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about effort and this recognition that some type of effort is required if this path is going to become something more than just theoretical. I remember when I heard Gil use this expression of a bookstand Buddhists. I think that's what he said. But this idea of, you know, just reading lots of Buddhist philosophy, which is great, but it's not the same, right, of course, as practicing. It's if we want to make this transition or this movement or bridge the gap between aspiring to and actually living this path of practice, this path of greater wisdom, greater compassion, then some effort is needed, some energy, some activity, right? There's some doing that needs to happen. Because certainly it takes effort to go against the stream of our habits, to go against the stream of these patterns that we have of body and mind that we've been cultivating for a lifetime, and these patterns of our relationships, these patterns of social structures, right, that kind of like keep us in a groove. And if we want to do something a little bit different, or a lot different, then it's going to require some energy, some effort, some activity. And we might say that right effort, that is the sixth step on the Eightfold Path. Many of you are familiar with this. We use this expression, right effort. We could also say wise effort. I first learned it as right effort, and somehow that expression stays in my mind. Samavayama. So right effort, we could say, is swimming against the stream, perhaps, but swimming towards the wholesome and away from the unwholesome. That's maybe one way that we could think of right effort, and this way that we can make our aspirations be transformational. And for whatever it is, whether it's the Buddhist path or learning calligraphy or pottery or tennis or bringing along some changes in our social world, working for justice and peace, all these things, right, take effort. And of course, effort depends on energy. And we could say that, or maybe I'll define for myself here, that effort is like the application of energy. Is this way in which we are, a particular way in which we're using our energy. But what is energy? We can think of energy, we can be something that we can feel in the body, is maybe it's the sense of vitality, maybe a really fine vibration. I don't know really how to explain it. Maybe you have your own words that you might say when you feel energetic or you feel like you have energy, how that feels. And in the mind, we might say that energy is associated with a little bit of maybe glee, gladness, or also with that being engaged with material, with whatever material it is we're looking at, whatever media. Whether it's just what the senses are bringing us, what we're seeing, smelling, tasting, etc., or whatever that is that is arising. So some energy in the mind is being engaged and connected with what's happening, as well as maybe some happiness. But we don't always feel like we have energy, of course. So what are some things that can support some energy? One is bringing attention to this experience of energy. So maybe we feel like we don't have quite enough, but maybe we can bring to mind or feel into. Sometimes we feel energy with our hands. There might be a little bit of tingling or something there. Or maybe there might be a way in which we can sit upright, and that takes a little bit of energy. So tuning into that. Because just like everything else, when we bring our attention to it, it brings some energy. So if we bring our attention to energy, it's likely that the energy will increase. If we can do this in a way, bring our attention in a way that is not demanding that the energy be there, it's not requiring things to be way, so it's not have some secret aversion tied up with it, but just resting our attention on the experience of energy, whether we have that in our mind or body, is one way to bring, to increase it. Another way is just recognizing, especially like with meditation practice or this Buddhist path, is to practice with others. Whether that's virtually, as we are right now, those of you who are on YouTube with me, there's something that's helpful to sit with others. We're, you know, IRC, we're offering these meditation retreats online, this recognition that it helps to be together even if we're not physically together. It kind of helps the energy. There's a sense, maybe encouragement, and the creating a container, or maybe some inspiration. Maybe we're inspired by somebody else's practice. So it's another way in which we might increase energy is to be with others, whether physically or virtually. Another way is when energy is aroused, when we play at the edge of our comfort zone. That is, when we get out a little bit of our grooves of these habits. But instead we touch into something a little bit different, or maybe it's just a glimpse of another possibility. Like, oh, so what was that? Oh, there's something here, this direction. I know for me that's often has happened, that when meditation practice, and I feel like when stumbling into some new territory, I know I've had this experience a number of times, like, oh, that was different. And then there's kind of tends to be a little bit more engagement. So whether it's with our meditation practice or with our daily life, but I like this word kind of play at the edge of our comfort zone, using this word comfort zone, but we could also say the edge of what's familiar or edge of kind of these grooves sometimes we get in. So just explore. And then Buddha talked about arousing energy, not so much how to, well, maybe it is a little bit about how to, but also some encouragement. And this is just an excerpt from a sutta that's longer and has more elements to it, but I don't know why I kind of get a kick out of this. So this sutta goes like this. Well, here's just an excerpt. A mendicant, a bhikkhu, a practitioner, somebody who's practicing. A mendicant has some work to do. And they think, I have some work to do, but while doing it, my body will get tired. So let me lie down. So they lie down and don't rouse energy for attaining the unattained, for achieving the unachieved, and for realizing the unrealized. So this idea, just thinking about doing work, things like, okay, that's going to make me tired, I better lie down. And then the Buddha, of course, he contrasts this well. A mendicant has some work to do, and they think, I have some work to do. While working, it's not easy to focus on the instruction of the Buddhas. So I better preemptively rouse up some energy for attaining the unattained, for achieving the unachieved, for realizing the unrealized. So they're seeing like, oh, okay, I'm not going to be able to practice. Awakening, I don't expect is going to happen in the next moment because I'll be working. So let me work, let me apply energy, effort towards my practice now, rather than lying down. There's a few more about has work to do, furthermore, has to go on a journey. I have to go on a journey, but while walking, my body will get tired. So let me lie down. And they lie down and they don't rouse energy. And then in contrast, a mendicant has to go on a journey. While walking, it's not easy to focus on the instructions of the Buddha. I better preemptively rouse up energy. And the sutta goes on with six other cases. I'm going for alms rounds, not having enough food, and having finished work, and some other things. But I appreciate very much kind of the Buddha recognizing, yeah, we often do this. I better conserve my energy that I'm not going to practice. Or I have other things to do that are pressing. I can't practice while I'm doing that. I have this either-or idea. And instead, the Buddha is saying, no, we don't have to believe these ideas that we have, that we can't practice while we're doing something, or that we can't use these as encouragement to practice. Some of these other responsibilities that we have, they can be a support for practice as opposed to a distraction. So an opportunity to rouse energy. I think, so maybe that's not language that I would use, but, you know, just to bring up a little bit more energy so that we can have some effort. And so right effort is about sorry about that. Having to cough kind of with some urgency there. So right effort as swimming towards the wholesome and away from the unwholesome. So Gregory Kramer, he summarizes this as this practice of right effort as out with the bad and in with the good. Whereas we could say the bad refers to those actions that bring harm, either to ourselves or others, or those mental qualities that keep us from settling down and seeing clearly headed towards more wisdom. So this classic core of what is abandoned, or I'm just going to name a list of lists here. Many of you will be familiar with this, these five hindrances. Maybe the three unwholesome roots, that is, greed, hatred, and delusion. The taints, this intoxication with sense pleasures, intoxication with self-making and ignorance. So these are some of the things that we're abandoning. Of course we're abandoning clinging. Right? Upadana, clinging to the aggregates, clinging to this conceit of I am, clinging to views. So this is so much like Buddhist practice, right? It's like abandoning what is unwholesome and cultivating what is wholesome. And often we give Dharma talks just on one little aspect of this. But just many of you are familiar with this, kind of these are some of the unwholesome qualities that we're abandoning. And then, of course, on the other side, the wholesome ones, the seven factors of awakening, the wholesome roots of non-greed, generosity, non-hatred, which is love, and non-delusion, which is wisdom. We cultivate the five faculties, we cultivate the Brahma-viharas, the paramis, right? All these lists. So I'm just giving you a list of lists just to help maybe kind of, sometimes for me, it's helpful to have like really the 10,000 foot view. Like, okay, sometimes we're abandoning things, sometimes we're cultivating things. But Of course, there's this interrelationship between abandoning the unwholesome and cultivating the wholesome. It's not like they're completely independent. Sometimes it's helpful to organize our thoughts, thinking that there's that which to be abandoned and that which to be cultivated. But there's this dynamic process, or this dynamism between these two, and we can work with this. So, of course, we notice that when we're cultivating calm with our meditation practice, then some agitation is getting abandoned. When we're cultivating loving-kindness, ill will is getting abandoned. So we can use this when we want to abandon the hindrance of desire. We work with the hindrances often by just bringing our attention to them. And as we abandon the hindrance, we can see that more settledness arises, more able to be present. So this interrelationship between them, and sometimes it might be that what's unwholesome is really predominant in our mind, predominant in our experience, and that's what we work with. Maybe we're already a little bit more settled and able to cultivate some of these other qualities, whether it's the Brahma-viharas, the paramis, the factors of awakening, just simple mindfulness or concentration. But there's, if we're going to be applying effort on either of these ways, of abandoning or cultivating, but there's also the way, the manner in which we do it, like how we do it. One thing is the direction where we're going, but another is how we do it. Because it's really easy to conflate effort, like this word effort, with this kind of intense, maybe we might say over-intense, like focus, kind of like a bearing down. Sometimes I use this expression of a sledgehammer. There's this feeling of, you know, I'm going to do this now, and there's this sledgehammer with our attention or with our focus, perhaps. Or maybe we have some kind of Dharma ambition, which is beautiful to have these inspirations, but this Dharma ambition for greater peace and freedom gets translated into this over-striving and over-efforting in such a way that is not sustainable and ends up being unhelpful. I learned this the hard way. Probably it's the only way to learn it, I would say. I'll say that at one retreat, in a practice discussion with one of the teachers said to me that I'm a striver, and I was like quite offended. I am not a striver. Of course, later I saw I was striving so much, but, you know, I didn't realize it. And I have certainly spent many of retreats where, you know, kind of like this real bearing down on trying to get concentrated. And certainly I could get concentrated, but there was a brittleness to it. There was a kind of a little bit of a unhealthiness to this, like kind of this aversion, almost a hatred towards everything that wasn't supporting my getting concentrated. So there can definitely be this over-efforting, over-striving in a way that isn't healthy. But at the same time, especially with meditation practice or any of Buddhist practice that we do, if we don't apply enough effort, if we're a little bit cavalier, lackadaisical perhaps, then this just leads to discouragement because we don't see the fruits of effort if we're not really placing effort. And then this leads to doubt often, like, does this work? Does this practice work? Do these teachers work? Teachings work? What about these teachers? Do they know what they're talking about? So we have to apply some amount of effort in order to see some of the fruits. So And just maybe so different levels of effort are needed at different times. And again, Gregory Kramer, he says that sometimes right effort is like the strenuous effort required to turn the soil and plant our gardens. That's work, to turn the soil and plant the gardens. And then he continues, at other times, right effort is like the steady application of the sun's heat as it slowly penetrates the soil and warms the seeds. If we want to see the fruit of our efforts, both are required, turning the soil, planting the seed, letting them have sun, letting them have water, just soaking up the water. So discerning which type of effort is needed for whatever we're doing is part of this practice of right effort. And I would say is also part of the art of practice, is knowing how much effort, and not only knowing how much, but how to turn the dial. Like, how can we back off and how can we apply more? And so notice one way we can do this is to practice during meditation with a mindfulness of breathing. As I did in the guided meditation, we can just first allow the attention to, if we notice that we're lost in thought a lot, just allow the attention to begin again. So the kind of the energy is to like just begin again with the sensations of breathing in this example. And then when we're starting to feel like, okay, there's a little bit more attention to breathing, there's a little bit more capacity or a little bit more ability to be with the breath, then we can look at what is the effort that we're applying and just ask ourselves this question in a really gentle, relaxed way. Not in a demanding voice, but what is the effort? And we can, as I had said in the guided meditation, we can use intention to help turn up the effort if we feel like we need it. So we could see, are we pouncing on the breath? Are we like really holding onto it, straining? Or perhaps there's another way in which we're kind of mindful, like, yeah, okay, I'll get around to it. I know the breath is there, but this thought is very provocative and I'll kind of do both at the same time. There's this kind of mindfulness where, yeah, we know we're breathing, but we're also kind of simultaneously thinking. And because there isn't a lot of clarity, it feels like there's two parallel tracks going on. And because we have mindfulness of the breath, we feel like we're mindful. Actually, what's happening, if we had a little bit more focus, we could see that it's mindfulness of the breath, and then a thought, and then the breath, and then a thought, where like the mind is actually wavering back and forth. So we don't need a lot, we don't need strong effort, but sometimes we might need just a little bit more effort. And with guided meditation, we can set the intention. It's one way of just dialing up the effort a little bit. Setting the intention, okay, I'm going to be mindful for the entirety of the in-breath. So it's not a very ambitious intention, but it's something in which we can do. Setting the intention is a way in which we can, it makes it more likely that, in fact, that we'll be with all of the in-breath, and chances are we'll be with a number of in-breaths, and then the mindfulness will start to wane, and when we notice that, we can set the attention again. And so we might, if we need to lessen the effort during the meditation, if we find that we really are kind of really tight, and this often can happen when we're trying to get concentrated, we might have this idea that we really have to, I think Gil uses this expression, bear down. This real way we have to strive, strain, maybe. So one way to lessen the effort is to open up the awareness. So one way to open up the awareness is, if we're being with the breath, is maybe to just be more broadly with the body. Sometimes I say that expression, to sit and know we're sitting. Maybe that's one way. Maybe that's too broad. Maybe just to choose some contact of the body where it's touching the seat, what your feet are touching, what your hands are touching, as well as the sensations of breathing. So not such a small point, but a little bit larger. Or another way to broaden our awareness is to bring it to sounds, kind of like open up the awareness to sounds and just allowing sounds to arise. So we're still being mindful, but not bearing down and straining quite so much. So that's one way in which we might be able to decrease the effort. But we might also have this fear of and resistance to the application of this energy or this some exertion or zeal. Sometimes in the suttas, those of you who are familiar with this, that language, this zeal, exertion, and I think even this language often gets translated as strive. So we might have this fear of this or this real resistance to that. Might feel like the last thing we want is somebody telling us to strive, this feeling of having a, what is that? You know, kind of like the whip. But can we come to an understanding of right effort that's helpful and wholesome, that recognizes that there can be a joy that's associated with a heartfelt commitment? Commitment to something that's wholesome. And this joy arises when the effort isn't too much, but instead is more like a commitment. Yes, I am committing myself to this practice for this next hour, or maybe Buddhist for this next half hour, however long you're sitting, or for just Buddhist practice more in general, taking the refuges. And can we also allow ourselves to apply ourselves with confidence, like that we can back off if it's too much effort, and we can turn it up if it's not quite enough effort. So can we come to this understanding of applying effort through investigation, through exploration, through noticing, in which we can appreciate that applying effort to this practice is such a beautiful way in which we can get out of the streams of our habits, the streams of our social structures and our relationships, and help us to find more and more freedom, more and more ease, while we are abandoning the unwholesome and cultivating the wholesome. So may our effort be a support for us, not feel something burdensome, something that we have to do, not something that is overly taxing so that it is not sustainable, but instead that allows us to have this commitment to practice, this commitment to non-harming, this commitment to greater peace, this commitment to discovering more freedom, so that those we come in contact with and spreading out from there, so that our practice and the way we apply effort can be a support not only for ourselves, but for all beings everywhere. Thank you.